Mr. Scott, Rio One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Scott?
I think it was Yoker, is that actually the proper place? Just outside Glasgow, Yoker, Y-O-K-E-R, I think that's what it is. And I was there, lived there for less than a year.
And what was the date?
Of my birth, 3rd of October, 1919.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background and your
lovely family. That's one thing I'll say. They're a very happy family. We're a very, very integrated family. My father, he had been in where I was born in Scotstoun West, was the actual place where I was born. Scotstoun West, Scotstoun West. And during the First World War, he was a turbine engineer, and he worked on destroyers. War finished, I was born, and they came to Dundee, which was the hometown, his hometown, and my mother's hometown. And a very integrated family.
How many brothers and sisters?
Remaining.
No, then.
Well, I had, the family then, father and mother, would be my brother, the elder brother, myself. My sister came along 7 years ago.
And what about when you moved to Dundee? What was life like?
Well, excellent, really. All my family went to one church. All the family were more or less resident in Dundee, so we integrated. We're all very happy. Met Sunday for church. To grandmother's for a meal. School, enjoyed school very much.
Tell me about your education. Where were you educated?
First of all, Butterburn Primary School, then I went on to Dundee High School.
And was there any particular subject you liked or were good at or bad at?
I like schooling generally, like sport. English, of course, I took Latin for 3 years.
And how old were you when you left? So about
1934. That could be from 1915, yes, it would be 34, that's good. I finished after 3 years.
And what did you plan to do, or what did your father plan for you to do?
At that particular time, as you will appreciate, jobs weren't hanging on trees. I always had a great love to thought to be a doctor, but that would possibly spy in the sky. And I went into insurance.
And which firm, and what has?
Union. Northern Assurance Company, which was eventually merged with the Commercial Union, the Northern Assurance Company, Scottish company. And so that's all my exams, yeah.
And what were you training to be?
Training, hopefully, to be a manager, inspector, manager, which happened. I trained in the fire department, surveying, sprinkler inspections. Drawing, policy production. Well, that was in the fire department. I went into the accident department, the light department, took my started sitting my exams for the Chartered Insurance Institute, and the war came.
Now, had you seen the war coming? Did you follow what was going on in Germany or things like that? Foreign affairs.
I think it was fairly obvious that the war was about to come. And as you know, the War Minister for Belize at that particular time wanted the doubling of the strength of the Territorial Army. And
that would be about April 1939.
No, 1938. And the Rommel just thought in his head, he said, that unless you selected an arm of the service for yourself, there's a possibility that 10% would go down the mines, which happened. So most of us in Dundee, as I'm talking about Dundee here, that's headquarters squadron area, bankers, legal clerks, insurance people in more or less administrative capacities, we all flocked to join the Territorial Army, and we joined the local fighting force for Yeomanry. And they were the second in Great Britain to double their strength. London Scottish was the first regiment to double their strength back and forth again with us.
So you were joining the first 5th?
I don't know if I joined the first. I've never been associated with the first. It was the 5th and 4th for Yeomanry that time.
Right. And you joined in December 38 or January 1939?
Yes.
And where was their drill hall?
Thistle Street, Dundee. It was a warehouse belonging to the Cleghorn jute mills. And Lieutenant Cleghorn was an officer. And he utilised his premises for testing the army.
And how did they take you in? How did you sign up?
Very quickly. There was an officer called Lieutenant J.G. Gordon Simpson, who was a solicitor in an office across the road from me. And he was on duty, and we went down there. We took the oath.
And what about uniform?
Well, we eventually got pieces of uniform. Well, not a complete uniform. It was almost First World War uniform. You know, the pipe stove trousers and the buttons and all the rest of it. We, at least I'm only going by myself. The kit I got initially was a beret without a badge. I got a mess tin which hung on the belt at the back at your bottom. I got a lovely holster, red leather. And that was the uniform we met once a week for drill training.
Now, what would you do at the drill hall? What did that? How did they start you on your training?
Oh, well, there are people called PSIs, permanent staff instructors, who were regulars, and they started giving you drill discipline, you know, movement, so you react to orders. They had one Vickers submachine gun, and we were trained on that. It was a waterproof Vickers machine gun, and they had it there, and it was scripted. You had to operate and fire, commands for firing and all that. Went to Territorial Army Camp at Ansmuir.
Hang on. So you had drill and the Vickers. Anything else you did at the drill hall?
Not really.
That was it?
Not really. That was all. The whole emphasis was everybody was in a state of flux. New people coming in, trying to be trained. Drill movement, so you react to orders. You smart yourself up.
Now, what did you do then when you went to Ansmuir? That Ansmuir Ladybank, that is, isn't it? They were weekend camps. What do you remember of them?
Yes, good driving. They had old vehicles. We were taught to drive.
Could you drive before?
Huh?
Could you drive before? Could you drive before?
No, I don't think I had driven before.
How did they take you through it then?
Okay, you sit in the, it was a Dodge, I think it was. Sit in the 1500 weight truck. You've got your corporal instructor there, and you just drive. He tells you how to deep pressure clutch going through the gate, the old place, man, and you drive.
Have any trouble?
Well, it was quite, you know, it's unusual to begin with, but the younger you are, the easier you will pick it up and adapt. Well, I enjoyed that camp very much indeed. The range, with a 30-yard range, just on the golf course.
And what was that for .22?
Pardon?
.22. And how did you do at shooting?
Just about, well, reasonable.
What other training would you get at Ansmuir?
You're starting to get into working with bodies, troops, or tents, and things like that, and you're becoming a team. You start to work and realize that you work with each other. You're not an individual. And in a weekend, you're doing nothing very, very much, as you can understand, the time you get everybody fed. The drill. That's what the drill organization routine. Not boot camp. It wasn't boot camp stuff. It was good stuff.
And had you seen any sign of the tanks, or so called the Mark 6B tank that I believe they might have had one or not?
We didn't have vehicles, you probably know. We didn't have anything until the Empress vehicles had been war. So we had very, very few vehicles. Never saw a tank.
Right, so that was the weekend camp. What about the summer camp? That was July at Catterick.
We went down to Catterick.
What do you remember of that camp?
Oh, that was a lovely camp. I ran in the sports. And in the usual army fashion, every squadron had to put out a team that didn't know very much about you. And there were four of us who were fairly good sprinters. So we went in the 4x400 sprinters and start off and get exhausted there. That's how we won. The presentation of prizes, the officers presented prizes. And immediately after that, I went on my first guard.
What was that like?
Oh, that was great. Now, there was an extra person. We got drill for guard drill, for pistol drill that time. I can remember the drill perfectly there. And Les Gibson did not run in the sports. He was not athletic. But there were four of us. I ran in the sports. And I went on, prepared to go up the guard, went on the guard. And there were four of us, Johnny Crichton, Gilchrist, Gibson, myself, were on the guard duty that night. And as you know, they're inspected. And the one who is supposed to be appear the tidiest gets the stick. He doesn't do the guard duty, but he does stick order way the next day. So we were all thought we were all pretty good here, but Gibson got the stick and he hadn't taken part in the sports. It was the first guard we did, first drill. I saw my first people being killed at the Catholic camp. Two young officers of another regiment driving, and well, you know, it was one of those old MG sports cars with the belt around the bonnet. Some had a telegraph pole going at speed. We're playing football very close to it. It was the first time.
And what sort of actual training did you do at Catterick?
Same again. Drill. Your sports are still part of your training. You're becoming a team. You play for your squadron. You're doing was football. There was drill. There was learning about guns. And at that particular time, it used to be form four drill, but then they changed to the three ranks. And that was another thing that had become to.
What guns were you taught, or was it just the Vickers again?
No, it didn't have the Vickers there at all. It was more like the revolver and rifle. Still not properly equipped with your uniform. Not too much of it, but not at all.
Now, what you were in just the 5 and 4 yeomanry, as far as you were concerned, this season.
I was concerned. I joined the 5 and 4 yeomanry, and then when they completed the double strength, one became the first regiment, and the other one became the second regiment.
And which were you?
Second.
And that was right from the start.
Right from the start. I've never been anything else other than the second factor.
And you went back home after the camp, and then what about the moment?
You're talking about, were we aware of what was going on? And that was really the first real indication that the war was coming.
What?
I didn't think we were going to get back from the camp. It was July, last week in July, and that was getting very, very close to the start of the war.
How did you feel about that?
I can't say I could feel anything at all about it, because you're young, you're enthusiastic, you don't realise what war is. You're among a set of people. You don't understand it. You read there that like the double strength, you hear that what Hitler was doing, you know, you knew that the Prime Minister was going over trying to get peace. But it doesn't form a picture of what war is. And no, we realise, I think most people will realise that it had to follow. Because if Hitler was coming through like that in 1933, he started with his Third Reich and his Nazi death, he was going to succeed because he was military in every way. I don't think I doubted that there was not to be a war.
And what about the mobilisation process? Were you in the key party or were you just mobilised on the...
You may laugh, you may not, it's irrelevant. I think it's the 25th of August. My mother phoned the office to say, come on the radio, tell it to the army, I've been mobilized, and they must report to their headquarters. So with much tears and weeping from the ladies in the office, fairly big office, I went home, got my uniform, and I went and helped a friend of mine to get into his uniform. We went down to Thistle Street there, and presented ourselves, and said, good, good, we're home. So, way back home, after mother and all the rest of the family. So that happened, done for a considerable time, reported again the next day, mainly filling sandbags, etc. Then comes.
So where were you doing the sandbag duty? Where were you doing that?
We've got sandbag, you see, because Jute and Dundee and Jutebag went down to Brutty Ferry, the sands, filled them, and then they were used for protection.
Whereabouts?
Anywhere, but mainly for our, we were filling in sandbags, which could be used anywhere we needed. Then after about a week, this Lieutenant J.G. Gordon Simpson, who knew me, and he said he wanted me to report to regimental headquarters in Kirkcaldy.
So you were with...
I was with HQ squadron.
Right.
And they come along and say, Scott, you are Clark, yes, I'm Clark. You can type. I said, yes, I do my studies with a typewriter. Go to Hunterston Report, and that was my first time in regimental headquarters.
Now, that's the... What do you mean by regimental headquarters? I mean...
Regimental headquarters is the colonel, adjutant, orderly room, regimental sergeant major. This is where the whole regiment is controlled from.
But isn't that the headquarters squadron?
What?
That's the headquarters squadron.
RHQ is part of headquarters squadron.
Right.
Regimental headquarters, and your staff is regimental headquarters.
Right.
The headquarters squadron, as you probably know, had the ACAC troop, the Recce troop, the Scout Car troop.
So you went to Hunter Street and you were acting as a clerk?
Started as a clerk. Came across the regular soldiers there, RSM Jones. He was the Queen's Base, RQMS head. He was the 3rd Carbineers. Technical Quartermaster Sergeant Edmonds, who was the 15th 19th Hussars. And it was there that I got to learn the whole logistics of how a regiment worked, you see. You get all your information coming from the squadrons, A, B, C, and HQ. And you produce the orders, movements, hospitals. And I found this really exciting.
How many were there in your office? How did the office work?
You've got your head, the steady head, was the head of the order of the staff.
Well, he was a sergeant, was he? Or
RQMS.
Regimental Quartermaster Sergeant. And what was he like, RQMS head?
Oh, okay, man. He knew all the dodges, he knew the King's Regulations, backside formers. And this is where I learned a lot. He knew, oh yes, look up that in King's Regulations, but what you do here, you have a drill here, it's an RSM, R.F. Jones, he was an RSM, Regiment Sentimental. And...
What was Jones like?
Oh, a ramrod, a great man, he really was. I don't put this on record, but RSM Jones had a great life in front of him, great soldier command. But I think he became commissioned later on, went out to the desert. But I thought he was more of a, he was better for the army as an RSM than he was as a lieutenant and for the tank troop. He came eventually going back to the, eventually went back to the tank range at Kirkcudbright.
And who else was in the office? You got those two?
The banker called Sergeant Ian Lamont. Myself was next. Two others.
And what were your daily duties then?
You've got to get all your reports from each of your squadrons coming in, how many are on parade, what duties are on, anybody going on courses, anybody going sick, and that's all collated, as you know, and I went to RAC records, that took the whole regiment and informed at RAC records, who are civilians, and produce all your orders. Send out, and you get your adjutant's instructions for, there are part one and part two orders, you probably know. Part two orders is for movement, part one orders when you're parade, what will happen, who's visiting you, what is it? And each squadron have their own orders going out to tell their own squadron. I find it fascinating. I went on a course to Brockenhurst with a senior.
When was that? While he was still at Kirkcaldy?
No, anything. No, went from
We'll come back to that then. So you were settling into the routine at Kirkcaldy. They weren't at Kirkcaldy long, were they?
I think it was December we went down to Aldershot.
So you didn't move to Leslie with the rest of...
Well, Kirkcaldy and Leslie are cheap by Joe. Right. I was in Leslie. Yes. Kirkcaldy was the regiment, of course. The HQ squadron went to Leslie, which is only a few miles away, you know, a couple of miles away from Leslie to Kirkcaldy. But I wasn't with the squadron in Leslie. No.
So you weren't at Leslie?
Yes.
I mean, you just said you were.
I know, I'm at HQ and I stayed in Kirkcaldy, but you're back and forward occasionally to your squadron. Which is awesome.
And,
let's see, my base was Kirkcaldy.
And anything else happened in that period before you went to Aldershot?
Yes. The first raid on the Forth Road Bridge.
What do you remember of that?
Not the road bridge.
The bridge.
Well, I could tell you a wee bit about that. I happened to be home on leave for that weekend, a couple of days. I came back with a big hoo-ha on. And it was the first German air raid on the Forth Bridge. And as far as I can remember, we had guns, but no ammunition for the rifles. And the LAD, or the Home Guard, whatever you want to call them, they either had guns or ammunition. So we had to take whatever we had, whether it was the guns or the ammunition, to them in Kirkcaldy, in Edinburgh. So that pilot was shot down there. Pilot Officer Gifford. His father was a solicitor in Castle Douglas. Now, this is interesting. It's nothing to do with the regiment, but I went to get a gold crystal vase engraved by a man in the police. And I got a conversation. His father was in charge of the guns on the Forth Bridge with Royal Artillery, and he showed me a great big piece of shrapnel, huge thing, very difficult to lift, which was there from bombs they dropped. So that just...
Anything else about the time at Kirkcaldy before you went to Aldershot?
I had an officer's dinner at the station. I don't remember that.
What do you remember of that?
Leo G. Malloy owned the station at Taylor. He was an officer in the 5th and G. Malloy. And that's all that. I think that was the last dinner of the war, I think, of the regiment. And I had the menu signed by all the officers.
Were you there? I mean,
no.
You just...
At RHQ, you knew everybody and everything, you know? Everybody came to you for information, that's right. You were the hub.
Now, what did you think of some of the key officers there? I mean, the colonel, would that be McIntosh? What was he like?
He is McIntosh. I think he was a great gentleman. He's a great gentleman. You know that he had a furniture business in Kirkcaldy. We put the tartan, the McIntosh tartan behind our badge. And yes, he was a good man. But Alexander McIntosh, very, very much indeed. But he never went into battle with the fighting problem, because he went on, he got a great job going away with the phantoms, with the long range radios. I liked him very much.
What about McIntyre?
Fergus McIntyre. No. Fergus S. McIntyre. He was second in command. He worked with Sir Michael Alistair Spencer Lane and the Linoleum Factory and Kirkcaldy.
What was he like? Any other officers that you did come into contact with at that stage, early stage?
Oh, yes, well.
What was he like?
Very much a disciplinarian. I admire him very much indeed. Disciplinarian, yes. Set his standards high. Fixed his wagon to a star, as Emerson said. He wanted the best and a good squadron. There was an officer, A.G. Brown, Major A.G. Brown, who was older than we were by far, and he did a lot of administrative work for the regiment to help me on through. But he was A Squadron. B Squadron was Sir John Gilmer.
What was he like?
Oh, Sir John Gilmer, great.
Brilliant. In what way?
Marvellous man. The man, he left from the front. He was very good. I remember one occasion when we were being shot at by Panther, and he got on the back of Sergeant British tank.
Hang on, what was he like when you first met him?
He's about 6 feet tall, he's young, good looking, a good officer.
He made a good impression.
Very proud of his squad.
Now the next move then would be to Aldershot, to Beaumont Barracks.
Condemned barracks, the old cavalry barracks.
What do you remember? You weren't in them long, were you?
No, we went to Farnham after that, very cool. In those cavalry barracks? Oh, yes.
What were they like?
I couldn't. They were dreadful. They were condemned barracks. Old cavalry barracks. It was a very, very cold winter. There was no water. Freezing. But it was very difficult. Didn't like that at all.
Were you aware of this story of them finding an old tank in the coal shed? Oh, right. Okay. So, did you do any? You were still working at RHQ. Working steadily at that. Not much change then to that routine. And then they moved to Farnham. Where were you at Farnham? What was it like there?
It's a big house, you know that house, associated with the royal family and all the rest of it. And once again, they always take the best building for the regimental headquarters, officers' mess, and all this, and that's where you are. And you feel you're doing a great job because the control comes from the regimental headquarters. Everything comes through you, and you feel that it's all logistics. It's good.
So you were just carrying on again. Anything happened at Farnham? You were there about altogether. I think you left in June 1940. To go to Ireland. But
we gave a demonstration at Aldershot and Long Valley for some. Now this is maybe for some foreign potentate to show our army strength off. Remember Long Valley, Aldershot. They're all marked 6A and 6Bs. And these were obsolete tanks which were issued to them. And they had no, you know all about the tanks, don't you? There's no intercom.
Well, tell me about them. What did you think of them? Because you later on worked in better tanks than that.
It is said that a .303 rifle bullet would go through. You know what they're calling. You give your command black flags. You tell the driver to go back and touch your foot on his right shoulder, at the left shoulder. But it was all done on the cavalry basis, you see. We worked in troops, as you know, and squadrons. And really on a cavalry back. The name of those people who were Ted, Head, and Jones. They're all cavalry men.
And